All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Student Success Exchange Podcast, a series of deep conversations about real student stories between a student affairs professional and the students he serves. I'm your host, David Ipyam. I'm a student affairs and services practitioner by profession. And when I'm not in the office, I work with fellow colleagues and professionals to elevate their game through change leadership, that's through davidipyam.com, with families to learn martial arts through mindovermatterkarate.com, and with couples to maximize their relationships through relationshipzen.ca. I nerd out about anything leadership development, including student success. In this episode, Althea Perala discusses three distinct and contrasting educational journeys. We begin with her past in a Catholic high school that was attached to a convent. Then we discuss how that compares with her self-affirming undergraduate student leadership experiences, and we end off with a discussion about her feelings of imposter syndrome, despite evidence success, in her master's in higher education specializing in student development and student services. Currently, she works at York University focusing on peer mentorship programming. When out of the office and in school, Althea enjoys spending time with her family and friends and eating her way through Toronto's food scene, all while likely fighting the urge to book a flight to explore new cultures. I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you love it, please share it with somebody else. Okay, so we're going to jump right into it, mm-hmm. as we do on this podcast. So how did you come to be a university student?
Wow, big question. Mm-hmm. Initially, my high school was very, I don't know, for lack of a better term, prestigious in that, you know, people went there for a purpose. We knew that it was a great high school to attend. And so, you know, come grade 12, everyone's going to university and everyone's going to the big universities. So U of T, Waterloo, things like that. And I was in a huge dilemma because I had no idea what I wanted to study. All I knew was that I kind of like psychology, even though I took one day of class in it and then I dropped it right away. So it was kind of a rush decision. It was terrifying, and I ended up accepting my admission on the last day to accept. So it was pretty scary as a grade 12, but I ended up choosing York, and it was such a fun time there or here. So it was almost like a game time decision for me to go to university because everyone else was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you highlighted a little bit about your high school. Mm-hmm. What was that high school experience like, and how did it influence your time at university, if at all?
Yeah. So high school was very interesting in that it was a all-girls Catholic high school attached to a convent. So you can imagine the things that, you know, happen there is very weird, that really wouldn't happen at any other high school.
Can you give us an example? I haven't been to one of those.
Yeah. there's just so many things. So, we were taught by nuns and priests.
Okay.
And so I think...
You mean every subject?
Not every subject, but...
Certain subjects.
Certain subjects,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Nuns and priests. Our, like, lunchroom was right in front of the, like, convent hallway because it was attached. And so we always had nuns in their gowns just
right.
visiting and walking around.
So even visually, it was a different experience.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like the culture there was very different because we almost felt, you know, they really preached a lot of, you know, very religious Catholic stuff. So mm-hmm. it was very interesting to grow up with that. Almost like in your head all the time.
Right.
So it was very strange, for sure.
And then, coming to York University, how did that experience shape your experience?
So, great question. The high school was very predominantly white. Mm-hmm. And so there were a few pockets of racialized students, and, I didn't even realize it at the time, but I ended up, you know, funnily enough, me catching up with a few of my friends who were also in different racialized groups. And we were just talking about all of the microaggressions that we had experienced and how that, you know, really affected the leadership opportunities that we were given. And so it was really, really eye-opening because I hadn't even reflected on it. Like, why would you? It's high school, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when I've had such a great career here at York. And so I was reflecting after that conversation, and there were so many things that I had applied to or that I had wanted to do. And my things always got denied, and I knew that there were other students who were way less qualified than me. And so it was really off-putting to just reflect on that and just being so naive, or like knowing now how naive I was and like thinking that it came down to, I don't know, my qualifications. And so I think university was so different because I was finally put into an atmosphere where the work that I put in was exactly the reward that I was reaping, right? So I became super involved in student council. I had tons of work study positions. I was also volunteering for a lot of things. And I've just never been so involved in my life. And I think a large part of that was because I hadn't been as involved in high school because of the opportunities that were given and, you know, very selective over there. So I think for that reason, my university life really transformed into something as great as it was because as a direct result of what high school was.
So a few things I want to ask you about based on that story, but I'll go back to the issue of racialization, that experience of feeling that. Could you describe to me or the audience where you believe you are local to? What are those identities that kind of...
It's quite complicated. I think the easiest answer is that I'm Canadian. I was born and raised in Toronto. But as really young, my parents made a huge effort for me to visit my grandparents while they were still alive. So I went to the Philippines quite a few times as a kid. So I think by the time I was 10, I was there maybe five times. And, you know, each time when you're flying so far away, you have to make it worthwhile. So I was there for a month or longer each time. So I was really in tune with the culture over there. And then growing up, I also grew up in a predominantly Italian neighborhood where my daycare, my elementary school, my high school, everything, that whole environment was all Italian and even embedded into the curriculum. So I was learning the language, I was learning the history on top of regular Ontario curriculum.
That is amazing. I had never heard of that.
I know.
And from the city as well. And so that's news to me.
Yeah, I didn't know either until I started talking about it. I mean, you don't really talk about these things in the day or in regular conversation. So,
So given those localities, how did that influence your experience transitioning into York University, which had other diversities?
Yeah, so that was extremely eye-opening. I didn't really realize how much of a bubble I was living in. But it was really important for me to appreciate other cultures. And I think this was coupled with the fact of, you know, all the experiences I had in high school where I finally realized that I was oppressed almost in a sense. I don't want to use the word oppressed, but I guess that's the right word. And I really wanted to make a point that if people are reaching out and if people are being involved and trying, it's really important that I reciprocate their efforts because who's to say that you shouldn't have this opportunity because of X, Y, and Z, right? So for me, that's really translated into really being open to everyone and also just being receptive to other people's stories and experiences.
It sounds like your positionality growing up helped you appreciate others and to create, to role model something that you would have appreciated from others growing up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, okay. So you talked about involvement. And so if you had to split your undergraduate student journey up into chapters, what would the major chapters be chronologically? And you could do it by involvement or any other way however you see your journey.
Sure. So
what was it like?
My first year I was just getting used to the lay of the land. So I was doing everything and nothing at the same time, just building my friend networks at university because I had only really known, I think, about five people coming into York. And York, they do Frosh a little bit differently because you're grouped in programs. And the five people that I knew ended up going to a different college. And I ended up, you know, having such a fun time at mine that they ended up moving over.
Oh, like, so they were at a different college within
for
York,
Frosh, yeah.
And then they moved over to you.
Yeah, after, because I had such a good time.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so after that experience, I got really involved in student government. So I was on council for 3 years.
So is that after Frosh Week, like first year you got involved?
Or no.
You mean second?
Second year. Okay. Yeah, second year.
For 3 years,
which was a great experience. And then... And during that summer, too, I also had my first ever job. I really don't know to this day why they hired me. I had no experience whatsoever. But I had my first job on campus, funnily enough, and I worked very closely with the master's office who were planning orientation. And then that developed a love for, you know, planning orientation. So I had it from the academic side and then the social side because I was involved with student government. And then after that, it kind of just became a snowball of things to do. So I got really involved with a club called Ascend. And for me, it's really important to reflect on these, on experiences that I have, and also reflect on my interactions with people. I really, a value that I really hold dear to me is that, like, I really want to make meaningful interactions, because I think there's really always something to learn with everybody. And so I joined Ascend, and that was extremely life-changing in the way that I carried conversations after that. And then that moved into me getting a job at the SCLD, so the Student Community and Leadership Development Department at York. And over there, I was just a regular work-study student. And then the next year, I had such a great, really, really great experience that I became the manager of sorts for a student team. And then after that, I retired that hat and then worked on an online transition. So various things of transition.
Online new student orientation online.
Right.
What is Ascend, just like in a sentence, the Ascend group that you got involved with after student government, sure, but before working with the Student Life Department?
Yeah, this is so hard to explain. Ascend is, it's just a leadership retreat that makes you almost understand the experiences of others. Like, it's a very empathetic, reflective retreat that really forces you to reflect on your values and what you bring into the world.
Okay, so, and that was a transformative experience for you.
Absolutely. And it was only 3 days. It's so like crazy how that can happen.
How did you change from that experience?
This deserves context, but the premise of Ascend is that you're grouped into a group of six people that you have never met before.
Okay.
So I was a vanguard, which is essentially a mentor, and you don't even know the people that you're working with. You only, I think, have three meetings that you're in training with, and then you are, you know, facilitating all of these activities in a group. And so the biggest thing was that, you know, you have all of these activities that are really introspective for these students, and watching them almost realize things that they hadn't even realized themselves was super impactful for me. And it's just so carefully designed to break down those barriers and break down those walls.
I was asking how you changed as a result of Ascend.
Yes, thank you.
No, but that's good context.
Yeah. How I changed. I think this really comes full circle, but you really appreciate how people are, you know, and you really come to understand that because someone is shy or they're, you know, an introvert, there are so many factors that have made them into that person. And there's just way more that meets the eye. And so ever since that experience, it has always been kind of, you know, me as a psych major, why is this person acting this way?
This was like your experiential education.
Exactly. Yeah, it was
All these leadership development experiences you had were like the experiential education component to your courses.
Yeah. So it was just truly eye-opening in terms of how I interacted with people after that and what I tried to take away after that.
This making you think of, it's so recent because I just came from a class, it's the idea that in mentorship teaching, we as a teacher expect that our students will learn, but there's an interact, exactly.
Yeah.
You're nodding because you already know where I'm going. What does the teaching experience do to the teacher, the mentor? And I'm hearing that there's this dialogic kind of experience where we are all changing through that experience. Even if you are the teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're not taking something, if you're not taking something away, then really what are you doing in that experience? I think there always should be a give and take experience when you do anything in life.
So when you look at all these involvement experiences, how do you make, what did it mean for you to be involved? I don't even know if you use the word involved or how did you, what does it mean to do those things you did?
I think for me, again, for context, I was in psychology and, you know, when you're in a major, you hope that you're going to pursue that major or else you might as well just wasted a few years of your life and lots of money. But I feel like it has always been driving me to student services because I've always wanted to, I was always in almost advocacy positions and also student support positions, you know, whether it was in council, in my job, in my volunteer positions, in clubs. And so I feel like it has always just driven me towards that avenue. So for me, being involved had been almost an intrinsic motivation to follow, you know, my purpose or my career path or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I had cut off your chronology earlier. So you went to Ascend, SCLD, a student life, and then you were a lead for a student team. And then I think that's about where I cut you off.
Yeah, I think there's
just... Oh, online transition.
Yeah.
You were a staff member for that.
Right. I worked with you for a little bit, yeah, developing that conference. There's just... And then, yeah, I think that was the end. I feel like I'm missing tons of things.
Did you did you go to convocation at all?
I did.
Okay.
I was, you know, almost not going to. And then my mom's like, what are you doing? So I did convocate. That was very fun.
Okay. Yeah. So you, what was that like? And what was going through your mind? How did it feel?
Yeah.
You know, you almost had like a multiple little careers at York.
Yeah.
And you were convocating and then you were off to U of T.
Right.
So, yeah.
It was very strange, but in probably the best way ever, considering I really did not want to convocate at all.
Why? Sorry.
I think for me, because I was, you know, I was pursuing a master's, I had already accepted my admission. I knew that I was going to have another convocation in the future. But then every, you know, peer pressure and everyone's like, but you did so much at York, and you know, convocating for my parents. So
symbolic.
I did. Yeah, okay. It was truly. So it was very... That whole day, everything just came full circle. So there's a joke that, you know, among my friends that none of us graduate in 4 years because we're all so involved. And so there were just so many people in different parts of my life at York that were, you know, graduating on the same day as me. And so, you know, as I'm walking in line, there's just so many people that I'm seeing again, you know, people that I froshed with, people that ended up being really, really great friends with me, people that I've worked with. And so just in line, we were laughing and, you know, you're in the gown and I had brought snacks because I always bring snacks because I'm always hungry on stage because it's such a long ceremony. And it was just, and then my, really luckily enough, I was involved with the President's Ambassador program as an undergrad.
Right.
So the coordinator for that really hooked it up for me and my family. So they were sitting front row and I was really close to the stage as well. And so we were, you know, almost 10 feet apart, really. And so the whole ceremony was very strange because I saw my family there and then I was sitting with my friends in the same row. Like, how does that how does that happen, right? And so when I crossed the stage, it was so amazing. And I ended up, you know, learning or getting to know Dr. Lenton quite well. And so we had a moment on the side.
President.
Yes, the president. That's so weird to say. Yeah, so we had an exchange.
Oh, I was just saying that just for the audience.
The context,
not
yes.
To correct you.
No, totally. It's just weird, you know,
because yeah, no,
she's
know
a person.
You because
and
then, you
yeah,
worked human quite side.
Closely.
Yeah,
exactly, so, yeah. Exactly. So we had a conversation and then the next person after that was the master of my college, who I worked quite closely for 3 years. And then after that was my prof, who I ended up having a seminar with. So it was just so weird how it all worked out. And I really think, you know, York was trying to close a chapter for me. So it was truly an amazing day for me. So I'm very glad my mom told me to do it. And all my parents. Yeah.
So what did it mean for you, your life, to convocate, if anything?
I think it was just... You know, because I generally am a reflective person, especially starting university, it's not necessarily that I hadn't looked back on what I had accomplished or what I had experienced, but I think it was just a really great way to culminate all of that, you know, especially because after the convocation, I had seen my friends who I'd worked with for a few summers now, and Greg and Lena, who were my bosses during that term. And so it was just... like a great, great closing chapter. It made it so hard to say goodbye to York for sure. But it really was just the culmination of everything coming to a close almost. But, you know, who I was when I started university is vastly different than who I was when I ended it. Yes, go for it.
Could you describe that? Like who the difference?
Yeah.
How you've remained changed or unchanged? Or how you've changed or remained unchanged from high school to now?
Yeah. It's really interesting because when I was meeting my friends from high school, we were all laughing because we were all so different, but the same in the sense that we became more of ourselves. We've just almost narrowed who yeah. we are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
the journey to becoming.
Exactly.
Is the what the self discovery, what yeah. is already there.
Exactly. Yeah, like exactly. You're only really becoming more of yourself.
Right. Talk, right?
Yeah. Anyway, a TED Talk.
I love it.
Yeah, so in high school I was, you know, always open to all of these opportunities and I was super engaged. And then I think through university, you know, like really finding the people that support you and like really bring out the best in you. Because I think in first year, it's very easy to go with the fun crowd and go with the like you just make so many friends. And then, you know, it kind of condenses after a while. And so university me had become very almost specialized in the group that I was that I really held close to me. And so they really pushed me to in like all aspects of my life. So professionally, you know, socially, like they really believed in the things that I didn't even believe in myself. And I think for me, because I'm generally very intrinsically motivated, like I've never really fallen into peer pressure. Like I don't do that. Those things that are driven by the crowd. It has really, really helped focus the things that I want to do in this world and, you know, what things I want to accomplish. So I feel like I just became more me and also a more, I guess, professional. I had to become a better adult after that. But yeah, it was
becoming
just
more me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Now you've touched on the importance of like through involvement, you know, you're refining your purpose. Mm-hmm. You talked about this, the connectedness, even on the stage, the connectedness mm-hmm. to peers, profs.
Right.
I was going to say faculty, same thing.
Yeah. staff.
Administration, yeah. family, mm-hmm. everybody was there.
Yeah.
So connectedness. And then by being involved, you were really connected to resources as well on campus. Mm-hmm. So for the potentially new student or the prospective student thinking right. about university, how does one get started from your own perspective?
Right.
What is it all about? What is student success all about? From you, for right. your perspective, for the people who identify with your story.
Right. So the resources, I think, you know, for me, I was really lucky enough to have a great first boss, have a great first experience on council. Things that were really pivotal in me, you know, creating those connections. And I feel like the resources just came naturally after that. So being involved with the administrative side at my job, I suck at biology. Let me just put it out there. I had to take biology. I don't know what I'm doing. And so, you know, naturally that led to the peer tutoring and things like that. And so I think...
So through your involvement in administration, then
right.
you got connected to peer tutoring.
Right.
So that was like a... Okay.
right. And yeah. so, you know, I feel like it was almost a natural progression of me expanding my circle became me figuring out the resources on campus.
Okay.
And even now working part-time at York, I'm just discovering so many other things that could have helped me as a student, you know, as a first year. But
so it's kind of like really abundant, the amount of resources.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
You're saying you were so involved for 4 or 5 years?
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
And now you're doing your master's at OISE
mm-hmm.
on U of T
mm-hmm.
and now working part-time at York, learning even more about the
Tons.
Resources on campus.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. It's just, it baffles my mind because you can never teach this to someone on the first day of, you know, orientation
right.
because it's just a flood. And I feel like, you know, naturally the way students are, we don't need anything until we're looking for
right.
it, right?
So you're saying it's there.
It's
out there.
It's there. Anything, literally anything that you need. And, you know, you just never know how to find them, really, because there's just so many.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, some students listening to the podcast or even, you know, faculty, staff, we're talking about your university experience as very extracurricular, co-curricular, professional development.
Yeah.
What was... Now, is that how you view your university experience? And what was your curricular experience like,
Yeah, that's exactly how I view my university
okay.
experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It has always been experiential education in every capacity. So I was in psychology. I was really good at psychology, but I wasn't, you know, impassioned about it. I feel like it's more of a, I just like listening to podcasts. I like understanding group dynamics. But, you know, in my third year, I realized that student success, you know, student affairs professionals was a thing. I had mm-hmm. no idea that was
yeah.
even a career path. And so after that, it had all made sense in terms of, you know, it really makes sense why I'm so enthralled with group dynamics because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we work as a team every single day. And so for me, my curricular, you know, development has been I don't want to say linear, but a very, very not so steep slope. Like, it has always just increased, but it has never been exponential the way that my growth co-curricular. Yeah.
I see.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I think you've painted the picture. So maybe to flesh that out a bit more, when have you felt most engaged and least engaged in the curriculum or co-curriculum?
The most engaged. I took a really amazing group behavior and groups course. Mm-hmm. And luckily, so you're forced to go into group on the first day of class, alphabetical ordered. And so I was really luckily enough to be placed in a group that vibed really well. Like, we were an amazing group while everyone was struggling, which is the point of the course. While everyone was struggling to have their group members submit things on time, my group was just like banging out all the time. So it was a really amazing experience. And then at the same time, I had been managing for the first time my student team, Red Zone. And so
group dynamics.
Exactly. And that was so eye-opening, applying that theory. That was my first time applying theory into, you know, my daily interactions. So you're learning about like forming, storming, and norming and performing. And so I'm like, this makes sense. Like, right now we're storming. And so it was it really challenged me to almost use the skills that I had, because I know that I'm generally a good people person, and I know that I could be very, you know, approachable in terms of how to solve things and things like that. And so I was like, yes, I could use this skill that I have, you know, naturally to help people perform better. Yeah. And so that was really the peak of my university experience, because it had really, you know, worked itself into my life.
We talk about high impact practices in higher ed, right?
Yeah.
And I'm hearing one here, because so it's interesting, because I ask you, when were you most engaged in, is when there was this synchronicity between your curricular and co-curricular, right?
Exactly.
On a daily basis.
Exactly.
And you were working like how many hours as a team lead?
I would say 12 to 15.
12 to 15. So that's significant time and investment.
Yeah.
And then you're in the course,
Yeah. You
know, probably 3 hours a week,
Yeah.
and then studying. So that's a deep learning right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that you're absolutely.
Applying. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. You touched on skills just now. So what are the various skills, or the top skills, because it's probably so many, you developed along the way that you are happy to be using now and in the future?
Mm-hmm. This is so funny.
I literally just
wrote a thing on competencies last night. It was due. I think my first one that I put was that I think emotionally intelligent, in that I can really understand or read people. And I think that's the psychology, again, mixing with my work. So in my current role, I work with students, and, you know, students are so funny because they bring everything to the table, but almost always try to show nothing. But then it manifests in so many different ways because, you know, they'll be stressed with school and their personal life. And so there's so many things playing out in their almost background. And then when they come to work, they're just like, I'm stressed. And so you really have to dissect how they present that stress or the things that they're going through. So that's something that I think I'm very strong in. And I think it helps that I'm currently a student, and I've been a student forever, really. So that's something. And I think communication for me has always been a strong suit as well. And I think that's just because naturally I'm a very honest and open person. So it's always been really easy for me to extract that from other people in terms of also being very open.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I don't know if
there's
I'm
a
like
safety. There's a safety that you create in interaction.
You.
You're welcome.
Yeah, So I think really interpersonal skills is where my strong suits lay. And I think, you know, I could talk about being logistically savvy, but I don't think that's as, you know, complex.
If I may,
yes.
When you were working with me,
yeah.
Definitely all those skills you talked about were there. Mm-hmm. But what I was. In addition to that, what I was most surprised by, because was that the administrative and logistical skills, mm-hmm. event planning, even like working the applications, mm-hmm. whether it's an Excel or Microsoft, mm-hmm. were all there as well.
Thank you.
So did you pick that up in university? Like, was it due to your involvement, or, you know, because there's not really an onboarding between us. It was, here's how we do it, and then you have to read my mind.
Right. I don't know. I think it it definitely helped being in the role at in my first few roles at SCLD. Like, it was all I had to become, you know, a student, like just watch over the students that I was helping to manage. And so it was very much that I think I had to get, you know, my priorities in order so that I could deliver those priorities to the students. And I also had great leadership in that time, too. So I think I almost modeled the mechanisms and the project management tools that they used. Because I would still say that I'm very bad at Excel.
Right, we're all learning. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, was it a Google Doc we were using, something like that?
I think it was SharePoint.
SharePoint, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which I despised, but that's another topic on its own.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so we talked about skills, purpose, connectedness, resources. So mm-hmm. how do you personally define, think about, or articulate student success?
This is going to sound so philosophical and deep, and I promise it's not. But I think for me, it's just, at the end of the day, can I sit with myself and be happy with what I did? I think for me, if what I work on doesn't align with the values that I hold and the values that I grew up with, you know, really trying to fine tune and see where I fit in, if I don't feel like what I worked, you know, made the world a better place at the end of the day, or, you know, changed someone for the better, then what did I do? Right. So for me, student success has always been, are you happy with what you're doing? And are you helping someone as well in that process? Hmm.
Yeah, those are two good questions for people who identify the story. Are you happy with what you're doing? Yeah. Or are you helping people in the process, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then let's work with that construct
for
a second.
Sure.
What should the goal of universities and colleges be if we were to use that definition of student success?
I mean, I think...
For you, yeah, your ideal.
Yeah. I think the student needs to get what they are looking out of the university. I think that's very broad, you know, whether it's a job or experience. I think because I had the experience of, you know, the last ditch effort to submit my application or to accept my application, I didn't know what I was looking for. And I was so lucky to find all of the things that I did find in university. But for students who are lost or students who are, you know, in a program because their parents want them to be in that program, how can the university and college system deliver something of value to them, even if that's not necessarily what they're looking for? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hardest route, right? The easiest route is, I want to be a doctor. Great. Here's an education. Here's med school. And so I think that is almost the easiest route. But where I think our jobs are really important is that we almost fine tune that direction that the students go into.
Okay. So what now on the flip side of that, what mm-hmm. has been or what might be frustrating about, what was frustrating to you about university?
This question, it's how bureaucratic and I think traditional university is. You know, we all have to take the gen eds and things like that, but there are so many ways that you can get education and other concepts, you know, not by taking a mandated, I took a theater class, which was so much fun. But at the end of the day, that's not what I took home from university, right? That's not what I'll be reflecting on 30 years from now about how great it was. I think university it's almost a weird thing now that, you know, students go to university to get a job, but now we're finding that students can't get a job after university because they didn't learn the application or they didn't get the experience that's needed for jobs. So I think working more towards providing experiential education, which is why I've been so lucky in this time that I've been at York, because I have had all of these roles and I've had
those out,
exactly.
Right?
And mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to gain the skills that I need as a professional. But I think where university and colleges fail is that it's trying to push too much towards critical thinking without pushing towards gaining those experiences and the skills that students need. So you see a lot of, you know, especially post-grad with all my friends, they don't have the soft skills that employers are looking for. They don't have, I don't know, they don't know how to use Excel. They don't know how to do logistical things, like very mm-hmm. simple things. Mm-hmm. There's such a huge gap that university is not addressing and neither is the job market. So I think students are left in limbo. And I think, I don't know if it's, you know, the Career Center obviously cannot fill in that huge gap because I think it's a systematic thing that has to be fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I definitely hear that. And, my question now is another personal question. So mm-hmm. what are the things in your life that enabled you to access university that way through like involvement, experiential education? What are the things in your life that had enabled you to do that or right. that were barriers to you, if any?
I think, again, because of who I am, because I'm so open and I'd like to think that I'm very driven. I'm always seeking those opportunities. I'm always seeking those resources.
It's a bit more ingrained in
exactly,
you.
Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And we were speaking earlier about, you know, me being very intrinsically motivated. Like, I will never do something if someone else is telling me unless mm-hmm. I believe that I should be doing that. And so I think moving forward in that I need to be able to find those resources. I don't know. I think this is such a challenging question because I think it's so personal to how people find.
Oh, yeah. But for you, yeah. I mean, like, so you've touched on the internal things.
Yes.
But I mean, environmentally, I guess we can go there.
Sure.
What are the things that enabled you to do so?
Yeah.
Or that blocked you at times?
Sure. I think university was the first time that I've ever felt really free to just, you know, get all of the things that were being offered. But I was really lucky, you know, the stereotype having tiger, you know, Asian parents. My parents weren't really like that. I think because my brother was more of a handful growing up, when I decided to go to university and when I decided to pursue psychology, which wasn't, you know, a terrible, you know, program in their eyes, they're like, sure, go for it. When I decided to, you know, pursue my master's in a degree that I still don't even really think they understand what my degree is in right now. They're very supportive. And so throughout the whole time, you know, when I was staying really late nights at campus, you know, on student government, and when I was basically living on campus during frosh week and all of those things, my parents were always there to pick me up, you know, drop me off to get showered at home, bring me food, and then drop me back off at work. Great. So they were really amazing in terms of supporting me. And they didn't necessarily have to understand what I was doing. I really don't think they understood what I was doing for the most part. But they've been really amazing and supportive in that way.
Yeah. So those are some important environmental pieces. Yeah. So I asked you that question because I was, so people listening to the story might mm-hmm. be thinking, okay, who are the people in my corner or
right.
not? And then
right.
if they're not in your corner, you said earlier
right.
that there are people on campus that you could connect with,
right? Right.
Whether it's staff members, faculty members, peers,
right.
et cetera, pretty
right.
early on. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, sorry. Nope.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. And I guess it wouldn't be fair to you if I didn't ask, what is it like to be a master's student? Or, you know, what's it like right now?
You know what? It's really hard. I feel like everyone glorifies once you say, like, yes, I got into my master's program. It's just so glorified. Like, you made it to the next step. But it is really hard.
Oh, okay.
And nobody really prepares you, I think, for that because... Uh-huh. It's almost the next step, you know, the next elevated step. So I find it challenging, especially leaving something that was so impactful for me and so meaningful, and all of the people and the networks that I had made, and almost starting from scratch, but in a way that is, I would say, almost less accessible. So all of my classes are at night, all of my classmates are much older than me, and they all have different priorities. So we're not hanging out after class at 9 p.m. in the evening, right? Mm. Like, those things just don't happen. So it's difficult almost carving a space for the engagement that I found in university.
Right.
In my undergrad.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked about connectedness, we talked about the purpose, all that. It's a very different dynamic now.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, okay. And then how are you finding academically?
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
I think
so it's almost like
it's
reverse,
a switch.
Isn't
it's
it?
Exactly. Oh, I was telling someone that the other day. I'm like, where, you know, I wasn't enthralled with the psychology, but I loved the student life and I loved the engagement. It's so reversed now that I love what I'm learning, but it's just such a different environment because mm-hmm. people, you know, aren't necessarily you know, in the same position as me, where I was really lucky enough to find people that I could relate to really well. And I think as a relationship-based person, like, I thrive on making those connections. But now I have to almost, like, really use my internal motivation to, like, really push me to get the things that I want to get out of this master's.
It's almost like you turn the things you like from your undergrad, which is the involvement, the leadership
right.
development, into your study.
Yeah.
So now you love your study.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You combine
so,
it.
Yeah, but my master's, the curriculum is amazing. I think being in the same room as, you know, leaders in the field has been so eye-opening, but also my imposter syndrome is crazy and nobody, and you know, they talk about that in grad school and I really thought it was just a buzzword that they threw around, but man, I had never, I really rarely ever doubt myself. Actually, I do it quite often. But it was so bad during the first few weeks. Like I really did not think I belonged there. And it was so weird for me to doubt that side of me because, you know, this is what I had excelled at my whole life.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you deal with imposter syndrome?
I don't know. I don't think it's a, I think it's a dealing with imposter syndrome. I don't know. I feel like I had reconnected with a lot of the people that have really motivated me and mentored me at York. But strange enough, like as much as they say, you got this, like you, I believe in you, it doesn't register in my head. And I think this might just be a more personal me thing. But I think knowing that what I'm there for, that everyone's starting almost on the same plane, like we all got in the same program, we're all in the same specialization. And I think for me, knowing that despite not having really any professional, like real non-work study student professional experience, and I'm still at that same level, is a boost. But I just have to remember that in times where like it really is hard to think that I am valuable or that I'm as impactful as other people in my program. So it's really difficult, but it has been very humbling and almost very empowering to know that, you know, I still made it in my program.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, you know, I was going to ask you about struggle. When have you most struggled in your university experience? That could be your undergrad or your master's. Maybe this was it, and that's fine.
Yeah, I think.
For the storytelling, I mean.
Yeah,
anything's fine. I just mean for this.
In my I think it was my third year. I had applied for a position on council that I was definitely not qualified to be in at all. But it was really hard for me to navigate the expectations of, you know, that I had for myself and the expectations that others had for me. And in that sense, like I really crumbled. And that was the first time ever in my life, you know, as a overachiever, I really crumbled under the pressure and I had to resign from the position because it just wasn't conducive. And then in that same, I think in the like next month after that, my dad got very sick. And so he was in the ICU for 4 months and that was incredibly difficult. Yeah. But I think I think it was almost school that really grounded me because that year I had made it a mission or a goal for mine. Like I wanted to get all straight A pluses that semester, that year. I know, who does that? But I did. I challenged myself to do that. And, you know, with that position crumbling and all the relationships that like fell apart because of that. And then my dad becoming in the, you know, going into the hospital. It was so difficult, but then I think that the school aspect really grounded me to like focus. And so I ended up missing the mark by 1 A, just 1 A. And I almost had a straight A plus semester. It was crazy. I really don't know how I did it because there were mental breakdowns going like all the time, but it was such a hard, I think a year that was happening, but yeah.
And were you, in retrospect, were you over-focusing on your academics or were you balancing all those things, like father, school?
Yeah.
Like, what was that like?
I don't think so. I really, even when I think back about it now, like I don't even remember like cracking open a textbook. I think it was, I think I'm still very lucky that, you know, school comes naturally and that psychology is, you know, easy for me to intake. But I think... I don't even like that. That is such a blur. I think it was really the people that like grounded me that like stayed throughout the really terrible moments. Because I couldn't have been a fun person to be around either. Right. So I think that was very grounding for me in retrospect.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. Students are humans, right? We're all humans and life happens. So and yet we're also pursuing this degree.
Exactly.
And all these deadlines. And it's a lot. And so thanks for sharing that because I think, you know, and even the fact that it's a blur, I think it tells you, it gives me a texture of how much it was.
Right. And I think like, at the time it was probably the worst time of my life or like balancing all of those things. But then you realize how much you grow past it almost. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice.
So then That's a good segue to our lightning round questions then.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, is that
okay? It's totally okay.
So what happens to you when things get hard?
When things get hard, I cook. I haven't created a better name for it, but I really like to call it procrastibaking. But because I don't bake, I can't call it procrastacooking because it doesn't have the same ring to it. Yeah. But I cook. That's how I center myself again.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite thing to cook?
I really, do you know bulgogi? It's like
Korean dish.
Yeah. I make bulgogi tacos, so it's almost like a mixture between like the Mexican taco, but I make a really great like sauce, a peanut. I don't know. I just mix everything that I like. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Where does pressure come from then? Internal or external?
Definitely internal.
Okay. So that internal voice. Mm-hmm. How do you view your need for control?
I don't know. I generally think I'm pretty easygoing, but I just have goals for myself. And so, I don't think I have, you know, a type A personality where everything has to be in like XYZ order.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. How would you finish this thought?
Okay.
I am...
Learning. Becoming. Mm-hmm. Can I quote Michelle Obama? I am becoming.
Absolutely. How do you sometimes get in your own way?
I think I'm learning to balance my instantaneous gratification for the long-term gratification.
Oh, what's your long-term gratification?
Again, just being happy. Okay. I feel like, it's so easy to watch Netflix instead of study, but you know that if you study, you'll get, you know, take more out of the content. So yeah, I'm still learning that.
Actually, what is balance? What is a balanced lifestyle, or does that word even resonate? Like, I don't know. I don't use the word balance. I use something else, but I'll let you go first.
Right. What does balance mean to me?
Or, yeah, what does it look like, I should say?
Not my current state right now. Okay. There's no balance in my life right now, but I think that's okay. Again, like, I'm doing sacrifices now so that I can benefit in the future.
So you look at balance on a kind of a longitudinal thing.
Exactly.
Not just in the moment.
Exactly. Okay. And I think that's because I'm working and doing full-time school, and then I'm trying to, you know, work out at the same time. So that's been crazy. But I don't know if I have a word for balance. I don't think I'm the vision for balance right now.
Okay. Yeah. No, absolutely. There's balance, like, how do you balance your day?
Right.
But then you're saying right now that here I know I'm putting in the work right now.
Right, right.
For longer term balance.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's almost the culture now for students to just, you know, overload right now so that they can take the most out of, you know, in the future. You know, and I think that contributes to burnout culture and things like that. And, you know, self-care, I feel like, has almost become a trigger word almost, because people think that self-care equals face masks and, you know, going for a night out instead of studying. But self-care is way more, like, it's literally just getting 8 hours of sleep. How many people can say that they do that, especially students, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that never happens in a student population, I find. Mm-hmm. So for me, balance is self-care, but it's in self-care in the ways that aren't, you know, glorified on social media and on Instagram. Like, it's not a spa day. It's It really is just meal prepping. So you're eating at proper times and eating good food. And so I've been learning that a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Is there a message that you'd like to share based, you know, this is a student success podcast, that you'd like to share with the community, student, staff, faculty, based on your experience?
I think we've, you know, talked in circles almost around this point, but I remember going to a networking event in my first year, and an alumni, they were all asked to, you know, the exact same question, what would you share? And one person said, in every interaction that you go through, always take something away from it, because you always have something learn, you know, you always have something to learn. And so that really, it stayed with me throughout this whole time. And I think throughout all of my interactions and all of my roles that I've taken, is that I always have something to learn from someone. Even if I don't like the person, I always have something to learn about their communication style or their management style. Like, it has always come down to, how can I be a better person and learn more after this interaction?
So this is like a big curiosity mindset, which helps you keep learning and developing and all that, and drives you almost.
Yeah, that's exactly where the motivation comes, because I don't really think there's an end goal in my development. Like, I think there's always room for improvement.
Okay. So for all those listening to the podcast then, let us know the thing you're taking away from this conversation.
Yes,
and post
please.
That on social media. Let us know, right? Engage in the conversation. I had to plug that.
Plug
in.
That, yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna throw out this question.
Sure.
I'll make it more personal too, because you, yeah. So what thoughts or feelings or goals are you carrying with you forward into your master's now?
I think the one at the forefront is that I'm realizing that, and this is, you know, coming from York, where it was really praised how authentic I was. And that's a value that I really think is at the top of my list almost, but being really authentic in my interactions and being vulnerable has been a huge thing that I'm trying to propel as a person, you know, even aside from my professional or my academic life. I'm really focused on having those authentic interactions and also drawing those from other people who are closed off. And I think especially at U of T, where the focus really is on academic excellence and the drive and the research and all of that, what I've come to really value is that there's so, so much value in, you know, I don't know, I'm not phrasing this right.
So authenticity and people?
Yeah, creating those meaningful connections and those meaningful interactions. And I think that has always been with me, you know, especially in this discussion. But making sure that I stay true to that has been something that's really important right now for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bringing that forward, especially in an environment which you're experiencing to be where that's less valued.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So bring it to the forefront.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
And cool. I think that's very almost ambiguous. It's not, you know, necessarily a huge goal or a well-defined goal, but
No, I think this is oh, sorry, I shouldn't say no, but like
I
it's resonating because of the theme of this conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's supported by all of the examples and your experience that you've been talking about, and it's kind of a vibe that you're going to go in for with bring to your intention. Yeah. That's the word I was trying to use.
Yes.
Try to find. Does that feel right?
Yeah. Attention? Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I think, you know, even now there's just almost that people are just going through the motions. Like there's no intentionality in what they're doing. And I think that, you know, drawing from what we were talking about with burnout culture, people are just doing everything just to do everything. But I had to learn this, you know, as well. But why are you doing all of these things? Why are you saying yes to all of these opportunities? Like, what are you gaining and what are you putting out when you're doing these things, right? So I think it's really important to be very intentional with the energy and the time that you spend.
I will close with one more question.
Yes.
I've given you three final questions, but just because you're still...
Yeah, I talk a lot, sorry.
You're generous with your experiences. Mm-hmm. What was your intention coming onto this podcast? I know I invited you. Actually, three people recommended you from my random sample of people I reached out to.
Wow.
So...
That's so nice.
Besides me, you know, the intention... So what was your intention coming onto this podcast?
Again, I've never been on a pod or on the other end of the podcast, but I really wanted to reflect, you know, you having been my mentor and working with you as well. I really wanted to reflect on my experiences in almost a defined way. I think it's really easy to think about the roles that I've been a part of and be like, oh, that was great because I met this person and that was great because I developed this skill, but really reflecting on how it makes me a person and how it changes me. That's what I was hoping to get. And obviously it's nice that people hopefully can resonate with the different themes in my story and also the different values that I have that I think a lot of people have, especially in the student affairs world. That was my intention.
Okay. Yeah. You feel like you've aligned with that intention or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I think it's very rare that I don't align with my values.
I am glad that you came, you know, accepted to be on the podcast.
Thank you so much
for spending the last 52 minutes with me.
That flew.
It flew by.
Yeah.
Many themes. And I'm looking forward to listening it over to again to reflect on it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
So thanks again for being here.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.